live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hello and welcome to Dare to Think Out Loud. I am Scorpio, guest hosting for LB Bork, who's a little under the weather today. So let's all wish him well and a fast recovery. Today's date is August 21st, 2020, and I would just like to thank everybody for taking a little time out of their Friday morning to listen to the show. I'm on here today with Mr. Mike Gatti. Mike, how are you, sir?
Hey, doing great, Dave. I hope you are.
Yeah, no complaints. Doing all right. The world's going to hell in a handbasket, as they say, but I'm doing okay.
Well, all we can really do, Dave, is point at it and say, there it is, because the powers to stop this, I believe, are well above our station.
Yeah, and I think we're kind of on, like on a runaway train right now that's being driven by this the locomotive of the federal government. And I think, honestly, this thing, there's no reforming the federal government. There's no fixing it. And I think people just need to realize that we're being ruled over by people who are maleficent, and they do not have good intentions for the population other than mass controlling people's lives.
Well, that's the very function of a central government, Dave, and that's why it was pushed for so hard back in 1787. A central government can control everyone. A government that cannot control everyone will soon lose its power, because the people who say, look, I choose not to play your silly game, once the people on the inside see how well the people on the outside are progressing without government, then government would be revealed for what it is, and people would say, hey, I don't need that oppression in my life.
Right, and that's why they have to keep creating all these new problems for us that only the federal government can fix, because, you know, the little people just can't fix it.
Well, the classic Hegelian dialectic, the government creates a problem of their own, which they claim they are the only people who can fix it, but it's going to take almost all of your freedoms and all of your cash, but they're going to fix this problem for you.
Right, just a little bit more money and we'll make it all okay. Yeah, and you know, Mike, and that's one thing I find particularly fascinating about your research, is that really one of the conclusions you draw is that essentially America's government, as it was founded, was the result of a conspiracy, a sort of a bait and switch from what was intended from the Articles of Confederation.
I think that point was well illustrated last night on Terry and I's show on Blog Talk Radio. We had a gentleman on who was an established attorney out of New Jersey, and we had him on to discuss the natural born citizen, which is a great discussion, and he is very prominent in that regard. But during the course of our discussion, I brought up several people who were involved in constructing the Constitution of 1787, and he didn't have a clue who they were, and one of them happened to be the longest sitting attorney general in the history of the United States, a state attorney general. And so was really remarkable, but that's not an isolated incident, Dave, because from 2017 and 2018, I worked for an organization of attorneys for 2 years, and I met hundreds of them and talked with hundreds of them over the 2 years. And the attorneys, and the only way you get to be a judge in this country is to be an attorney, and the attorneys know there's a constitution, but they don't have a clue how and why we have one.
Right. And I believe Terry was saying, too, that, you know, there's no way you can make the argument that Kamala Harris is eligible to be vice president or president, for that matter, because I think that's what's coming.
Well, I think that's exactly the plan, Dave. I think it was planned from day one. They put her into the primaries, and she, you know, was a no-brainer. I mean, nobody wanted her. You look at her, you listen to her discussions, everything else, and establishment, you know, whoever we want to call them and whatever we want to call them, made the statement, well, if we're going to get her in there, let's put her in as a running mate for an old idiot who can't put a sentence together. And that will ensure that she becomes president. So, and she does not meet the criteria for a natural born citizen. And I brought out the point last night, this attorney has done some great work. He's really good at the natural born citizen approach, and he proves it. And there's been at least 5 Supreme Court decisions that has defined a natural born citizen, and she surely doesn't fit the bill. Natural born citizen was defined by the Supreme Court as a person whose parents are both citizens of the country. And, of course, Kamala Harris's parents were not citizens of the United States. One was from India and one was from Jamaica. And if I'm not, they were here on student visas. So they were not citizens of the United States. She is not a citizen of the United States, but a natural born citizen. But the thing that I brought out last night was the fact that both Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio are in the same boat. And in 2016, the Republican Party had a great chance to stand up and say, look, we're not going to allow these two men to run for president because they are constitutionally ineligible according to Article 2, Section 2. They are constitutionally ineligible, and we're not going to allow them to run. And that is a position made by the party. Now, had the Republican Party made that position in 2016, they would be standing on the high ground today to make that claim about Kamala Harris. And they didn't do it for political reasons, obviously. And they didn't do it. And so now they're going to have to pay the price 4 years later.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff is just swept under the rug and ignored by both parties. And I think part of the reason is that, when you start talking about a natural born citizen, you're talking about wanting people from the country to lead the country, which leads to sort of a nationalistic, mindset. And that is not what they want to cultivate either party right now, obviously, because, the big push is to go for a borderless world with a one world government.
Well, that's exactly true. And as you and I mentioned earlier, we've even now got the media entertaining the thoughts of repealing the 22nd Amendment to allow Obama to run again. So obviously they have been planning this far in advance, because the media don't bring these things up unless there is an agenda out there somewhere. So to start talking about repealing the 22nd Amendment, and now they were even saying on Fox News that they thought that a lot of Republicans would support it now.
Right. Yeah. And you're right about the mainstream media. It's only worthwhile watching because it sort of drops little breadcrumbs and little hints about what the coming agenda is, because they want to sort of normalize these concepts in people's minds before they happen. That's really the only purpose of the mainstream media anymore.
That's a classic psyops operation. You run a little what we used to refer to it when I was in the business is, let's run this flag up the flagpole and see who salutes. In other words, it was saying, let's run this idea out there and let the people banner around with it a little bit And once the people have heard it, it becomes acceptable in so many minds because they heard it somewhere.
Right. Yes, exactly. It's kind of like when you watch a movie or read a book, there's always the concept of foreshadowing. You bring in a concept that's going to happen later in the story. So when it does happen, it's more believable to the viewer or the reader. And that's exactly the role of the mainstream media now. It's really incredible. And really, I think having Obama serve a third or fourth term would be on the books and part of what is planned. Why not? I mean, the guy accomplished a great deal if you look at it from the point of view of the people planning the agenda.
Well, that is true. And, also a point that I hope we can get into, Dave, is the fact that today what I call the Marxist left in this country, and now some of the Marxist right in this country, are failing and absolutely refuse to take a look at the chaos of the inner cities, where the inner cities are usually run by these leftists and the Marxists. And we see, if you were to take a trip on the streets of San Francisco today in the heart of Nancy Pelosi country, you would see just a terrible sight. I mean, people actually defecating on the sidewalks and all this other stuff, which is, a typical third world country under socialism. But the way that people deal with that now, and we are taught, and the American public has bought it hook, line, and sinker, that all of that has occurred because of racism. And it's not.
Oh, yes, yes. Everything. Yeah, of course. Yes. You brought up an interesting concept, Mike. You talked about the right Marxists, the far right Marxists. Could you expand upon that point? Because usually people only talk about Marxism in conjunction with, far left people.
Well, I think a lot of people now, and I mentioned it on a talk radio show yesterday, we have, Kasich now, who is coming out, the wonderful Republican from Ohio, and he's coming out, saying, he's going to support the Democrats because Trump is crazy and all this other stuff. Here again, the Republicans failed to deal with their own problem. So many people are unaware that in 2016, when Kasich ran for president, his major financer was George Soros. Why was the Republican Party allowing a candidate that was being supported financially by a leftist? If the party will not discipline itself, then it's going to be chaos. And that's what we're dealing with now, because now we don't have a united front on the right, if there is such a thing as the right anymore. I have serious doubts, but we don't have a united front there anymore.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It really does seem like we have a whole, kind of hidden political class that are given complete immunity from any crimes they may commit by the shadow government. I think these operatives, when they get to a certain level, they're told flat out that they have complete immunity for anything they might do. That includes people like George Soros, the Clintons, and a whole list of others. Pelosi, it goes on and on. And then you have this sort of punitive and selective enforcement of the so-called rules by the FBI, where they just sort of prosecute people that are in the way politically. And we've seen that happen a bunch of times. And now, of course, the newest person is this Steve Bannon character, who's been arrested on some scheme to embezzle money from the border wall project, which in a way is sort of a two for one, right? Because they're taking out the concept, you can't have a wall for your national border. That's racist and evil. And it just makes Trump look bad because, gee, everyone around him is corrupt, And I just see the selective enforcement of all these rules is just off the charts and unprecedented right now.
Well, we've got, in my opinion, with Bannon, we've got deja vu all over again. And I know my grandfather told me years ago that the American public has the attention span of an Irish setter, and that's being tough on the dog. But 2005, yeah. 2005, we had this movement called the Minuteman Project, and it was I mean, it was really gathering steam. I was there, one of the leaders of that project, for a state leader at the time, New Mexico. And we were there for the entire month, and we had hundreds of people coming to the border to stand watch, and we had money coming in. There were times that the people who couldn't be there to help defend the border were sending in money, like $10,000. I think they were averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 grand a day in contributions from the American public. It became such a big movement that Sean Hannity and a couple of other celebrities actually came to the border to do their show. They didn't interview from Washington or wherever their studios are. They actually came to the border and did a show. Lou Dobbs was another one. And, I mean, it was something to be there. We had foreign press. We had all kind of stuff down in the Arizona border area. And it was bringing a lot of attention to the problem. Well, the next thing we know, about midway through the month, the two leaders of the project, Chris Simcox and Jim Gilchrist, the next thing we know, they're on planes to Washington, D.C. To wine and dine with the members of Congress. And when they got back, the first thing out of Chris Simcox's mouth was, well, we probably need to shut this thing down, you know, because we could create an international incident. So here were two guys who left Arizona who were the leaders of a project. They come back 2 days later and they want to shut it down. And then later on, both men were charged. They were told by the Republican Party, if you will get in line with us, we will make sure that this project moves forward, that we'll get all this stuff done. Well, you know, basically what the Republican Party did was they shut it down. They promised Chris Simcox and Jim Gilchrist they would run for Congress. And, of course, Gilchrist did, and he ran in a district, and he might have gotten 5% of the vote. And then they ran Chris Simcox in Arizona against John McCain, you know, whoopee. And now Chris Simcox is in prison. You know, for molesting children. I wonder where he learned that trick. And every major movement that I've been in my lifetime, and there's three of them, three major movements, Dave, have all been shut down by Republican operatives. So when the Republicans start telling me they're out there looking to create a great country, I don't believe them, because I've seen them shut down good movements.
Yeah. Now, do you think that guy was set up on those child molestation charges, or do you think he could have possibly been involved in something like that?
Well, here's the thing I know is that when we got to Tombstone, Arizona, in late March, but the project began on the 1st of April. And, you know, we had some congressional people down there making presentations. Tom Tancredo, a traitor from Colorado, was one of them. You know, good old Republican Tom Tancredo. So we had these people who were there. And I really, to be honest with you, I didn't think it was going to be much of a – I thought we would make some noise, but I never dreamed it would make the noise that it made. I mean – there were, you know, for the days I was there, 30 days I was there, I had reporters, foreign reporters, reporters from the Baltimore Sun, Wisconsin, Missouri. There were people there all the time. And then, of course, like I said before, Sean Hannity, Lou Dobbs come down and do an On the Border show. So, but when I got there, Chris Simcox was sleeping on the floor of his business, which was the Tombstone Tumbleweed newspaper. And, so he didn't have any money. He didn't have anything. He had invested his retirement into that newspaper, and the newspaper wasn't doing well. And so this money started pouring in, and I knew a lady who lived in Arkansas who was helping with the deposits and stuff. And Chris Simcox was telling her up front, hey, take that money. When you take that money, the bank deposit it in my account. And all of us in the project were yelling at him, you know, you've got to keep this squeaky clean, because we can't give the opposition anything to come at us with on this stuff. You've got to keep it squeaky clean. Well, he didn't. And then, you know, there was a lot of charges later. I don't think his character was super to start with. Obviously not, because when all the charges came out, his one of his ex-wives said he had abused his own child in California when he was there. So you know, I'm not sure about that day, but I know that happened. But I know suddenly you took two men and you put them in the Republican Party, took them to Washington, and I'm sure bedazzled them with dinners and other stuff. And then the next thing you know, they're collecting a lot of money, and they've got to, they saw that money pouring in, and then they actually ended up, Gilchrist and Simcox ended up battling each other publicly for to see who got the money. So it, you know, if you don't have a strong character, it's going to go crazy.
Well, and you throw in money and power in the mix, and you're going to end up with trouble usually. And at the very least, even if the guy, you know, whether he was innocent or not on those charges, it certainly makes a wonderful epitaph for the whole movement. Well, the guy was a child molester. See the kind of people that get involved in that? And it's the same thing with the border wall thing today with Bannon. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, I don't know Bannon if he's a good guy or not. But, you know, they were always trying to smear him with these anti-Semitism charges in the beginning. Oh, he's an anti-Semite. And it turns out, you know, Bannon was one of the original investors in the Seinfeld show. So, and he worked for Goldman Sachs, which, of course, is, you know, pretty much a Jewish-run company.
Right.
So the guy was certainly not an anti-Semite. And, you know, he also ended up making like several hundred million dollars between his career with Goldman Sachs and investing in Seinfeld, which was, you know, a fabulously popular show. So the guy was already very wealthy. And these charges involve, you know, they're saying hundreds of thousands of dollars were embezzled. Well, it's hard to imagine someone that, you know, has a couple hundred million dollars in the bank embezzling a few hundred thousand dollars. It doesn't make any sense. And you look at like the incredible crimes from the Clinton Foundation, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars that have sort of disappeared and gone to funny places if you look at any of the people that have researched that topic. So it's really an incredible situation here where the FBI is nothing more than a tool to punish people who are inconvenient or giving trouble to the secret government. And I think the FBI has been corrupt since the very beginning that it was formed.
Well, you know, we had Patrick Henry warn us about the federal sheriffs. And that's exactly what the FBI is. And he said the federal sheriffs will ruin you with impunity. And my goodness, is that not exactly what they do?
Boy, that's so true. And look at all the hassle that the moonshiners got, which really I don't see how that can even be declared illegal because you're not paying a federal tax on liquor. And you know, they just destroyed countless people's lives and drove so many people into poverty with their campaign against moonshining. And of course, you know, we had the head of the FBI, Hoover, denying that the mafia even exists for many years, which is, you know, the top law enforcement man in the country doesn't know that the mafia exists. I mean, please.
Well, he was probably busy cross. Dave, and go back into politics.
Oh, you cut out there for a minute, Mike, but I think you're coming back. No, you're kind of cutting out. It's interesting. As soon as we start to badmouth,
end up being sexual deviant.
Okay, are you there, Mike? You kind of cut out for a little while. Are you? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dave. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah. Now you're back. Okay, it was interesting. As soon as we started to criticize the depth of corruption within the FBI, you start to cut out. But I think you're okay now.
Well, is this the first time this has happened to us, Dave?
No, it's always the timing of it's always very interesting. So, you know, yeah.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I mean, it looks like America is ruled in many cases by sexual deviants and, you know, and child molesters, basically. You know, you don't looked at the Epstein scandal, but we can go past that. I mean, look in the 90s when Bob Dole, who was Senate Majority Leader, I think, or Minority Whip or whichever one it was, Bob Dole told us how wonderful that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, and that she was going to be, and she was, confirmed like 96-3 or something like that, and how wonderful she was probably going to be, the greatest Chief Justice ever. And she had already written an opinion, a paper stating that sex between adults and children over 12 should not be a crime. So we can go all the way back to the 90s when they were preaching this stuff. And then if you will remember that wonderful group called the Log Cabin Republicans. And look.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Look, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's connection with NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association. She was connected with them. I mean, you know, those are pedophiles. Why in the world are we putting anybody in the court who supports pedophiles and who says that sex between adults and children over 12 should not be a crime? And yet we've got them there and nobody says anything. Nobody complains. And that's why they keep doing it, Dave, because there is no serious opposition to the corruption that this government propagates on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah. And I think this whole pedophile thing is actually worldwide. And it's also a method of control for the people on the inside, because once they have pictures of you, you know, doing something inappropriate with either a little boy or a little girl, then it's going to be very difficult for you to say, well, I'm not going to go along with this anymore. I'm doing my own thing. And so that's part of the method of control on the people on the inside. And you mentioned the Epstein scandal. I really think this, what we're hearing from the media, is just a tip of the iceberg, and it's actually being covered up. I don't believe that the only people being brought to Epstein's island were 15-year-old girls. Okay, we're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
I want want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome back to Dare to Think Out Loud. Today I'm sitting in for LB, who's a little under the weather, and I'm having a conversation here with Mike Gaddy. And before the break, we were just sort of talking about this the concept of pedophilia as a method of control for the people on the inside. And I think that's exactly what's going on. And, you know, I was just going to touch upon this Epstein thing you had just mentioned, Mike, which I think this whole thing's being covered up. The notion that only 14 and 15-year-old, 16-year-old girls were being brought to the island, I think is ludicrous. And I think what was really going on is that much, much younger girls and boys are being taken to that island, and all these power elite from around the world were going there, and they were being filmed to be blackmailed and to be part of the inner circle. So what are your thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, one thing I remember, Dave, and I remember it very distinctly because I was in Washington, D.C. at the time, and I was posted there, and I remember the huge upheaval concerning a congressman from Massachusetts named Barney Frank. And he was actually advertising in a local newspaper for gay prostitutes. And he had actually gotten some people out of prison to operate as gay prostitutes, one of whom was living with him at the time. And I remember being there, and the whole thing kind of shook the city for a while, that he actually was petitioning for release of these men from prison on congressional letterhead, and that he was doing advertisements in the newspaper in Washington, D.C. at the time, which was from a homosexual community. It was called the Gay Blade. And he was doing advertisements, and they were basically running a house of prostitution for gays. And then it went back and forth in the D.C. for quite a while. And I know it was in the rest of the country, but it was really a hot topic in D.C. if you happen to be there. I mean, everybody everywhere was talking about it. So
I remember hearing about this, and I remember the Spotlight newspaper covered it in depth, and he was actually using his condominium in D.C. as a gay brothel, and it's amazing how really it all got swept under the rug, and he remained in power for many years after that, and it was just sort of down the memory hole.
Right, and the thing I remember very distinctly was I heard that there was going to be a congressional ethics committee hearing on Barney Frank. So I thought, hey, I'm going to go watch that. I want to see what actually happens. And, and there was a gallery there for that, and the public could hear what was going on. And so it came for criticisms of his behavior, and there were none. There was only one congressman who stood up and just really blasted him for this, for his indiscretions and for using the people's resources for the and family member who was at that time in D.C., especially around. I was also there when they had the Iran-Contra fiasco, and I was able to talk with on that on several occasions, Congressman Dorner. And I was just absolutely amazed that he was the only one not one other member, what are there, 425 members of Congress, and one of them stands up to condemn what he did. And guess what? Next congressional election, Bob Dornan's defeated because a lot of people put money behind him. So let's, that takes us back to, you know, the mid to late 80s, Dave. So, and, you know, and we know it happened before that. We've got Dennis Hastert. You've got all of these other people who were involved in this kind of stuff. The Page boy problem that took down several members of Congress. And you have these things, and they become prominent. And like you said, I was just absolutely astounded. And, of course, it gave me a good insight at the time that there was, even though all of this was proved beyond a shadow of a doubt, and actually Barney Frank should have been charged criminally for some of the acts that he was doing, nothing happens. So it made me think, too, what you said about the FBI, and it was well known in the circles when he was there, the leader of the FBI, that he actually sent members of the FBI out to get dossiers of incriminating evidence on every member of Congress. That they could do. So he was using the people's money to build a
right
portfolio, which he would use against the Congress. When J. Edgar Hoover wanted to, he would send private notes to members of Congress, he wouldn't want this picture to come out.
Right. And as far as I know, you know, when you talk about a gay brothel, you're talking about money changing hands for sex, and I believe that's illegal. But again, that doesn't matter because all these laws are selectively enforced. And, you know, that was back, that was in the 80s. Things have progressed quite a bit since then. And we're at a point now where, you know, the FBI is nothing more than a tool to take out political opponents and people that are in the way of the agenda, while other people are allowed to, just to run hog wild, as my grandfather used to say.
Well, rewarded is conduct repeated, Dave. And you know, it goes back to the old saying, if you have rules without penalties, you really don't have rules, you just have mere suggestions. So our Constitution is a bill of suggestions, because nothing is enforced that will protect the people's rights. And I totally believe, from if you know the groundwork of what brought about this Constitution, it's very easy to see that it was intended to do just exactly what it did, and what it's doing today. And Lysander Spooner covered that pretty well. He said it was either designed to do what it's doing or it's powerless to prevent it. He said that well over 100 years ago. So we actually have no rules. And the rules are, you know, when I talk about the Constitution was written by lawyers for lawyers. And that's why the judiciary today is the final arbiter of everything that happens. The Supreme Court, if it goes to the Supreme Court and they issue an opinion, that opinion becomes law. And it doesn't have to be based on the Constitution at all. So, you know, that's why, you know, my program on Sundays is called Embracing Addicted to Our Own Destruction. And we're addicted to this. People have been taught from childhood that this Constitution is the end, do all to end all. And it's actually the ticket that the government uses to oppress and steal from us all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really it's getting to the point of the theater of the absurd right now. You know, I've been suffering through the Democrat National Convention, and you know, it's a surreal experience to watch it on several levels. Because on one level, you know, it's a clown show and a parade of degenerates and weirdos. But on another level, it's also sort of chilling to see a completely empty convention hall with just little signs, you know, for where the people would be sitting. There's maybe, you know, it looks like maybe a dozen or so people in the room. And kind of the message that they're, you know, projecting through this is that, you know, we don't need you anymore. We don't need an audience. We don't need the people's participation. The machine just runs on without you. So I found that to be sort of a surreal and a bit chilling. Have you caught any of this convention?
Actually, I usually try to keep most of my meals down when I eat. So I try to avoid anything party politics because it's upset. But I do like to hear what people have to say about those. But I don't know. I can stomach watching them.
Yeah, it's pretty bad, and this kind of touches upon what you were talking about a little earlier, which is that the Democrats aren't taking responsibility for the mass destruction that's been happening in the cities they run, and I'm seeing people in this convention elevated into positions of power that clearly do not have the qualifications or the ability to run much of anything, not even their own lives. There's all these transgender activists and binary, non-binary, I don't know, all these weird, phrases. I don't even know what they all mean, frankly. But, people that are just non-binary or not regular human beings, they're in a new class of their own, which is sort of part of this transhumanist agenda they want to move us forward into. And I'm just seeing the lack of quality of the people is frightening, and it translates into mass destruction of cities and people's lives on the streets of the cities of America.
Well, Dave, one of the things that's troubling me, too, is, and I agree with you 100%, and I think the evil offspring of liberal cultural Marxism we're now witnessing with Antifa and BLM, and I will say openly that I believe both of those are CIA-run operations. One of the things that I began to see recently in a couple of places that's troubling me, and that is that members of BLM and Antifa are wearing little pieces of tape on the front and the back of their get-ups. And this is kind of a fluorescent tape. And that really troubles me because here is what such things were used for in many control situations, is if you've got a sniper somewhere who's going to shoot people, to create an incident, you want to make sure that the friendlies are so designated. And I can see no other reason for these people wearing these little strips of tape on the front and back of their getup for Antifa and BLM. It makes no sense. And I realize that past experience is a little out there. But when I began to see this, especially at Stone Mountain this past weekend, when I began to see such things and even saw some in Portland, when you begin to see this and also San Antonio, when you begin to see this on multiple occasions, it's rather chilling for me.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question that those are intelligence-run operations. Also because there's no accountability for anything these people do. They can beat people up in the streets, light buildings on fire. Somehow nobody gets charged. It's all part of peaceful protesting, according to the media. So, and you can see that any organization that doesn't have official approval is immediately demonized and made into be something very dangerous for our democracy, whereas this is all just peaceful protesting, and they're trying to make a better world. And the little pieces of tape are very interesting, Mike, because one thing I've also seen pictures of, and people have screen captured images of these people in these two movements, and they have little earpieces in with like the little curly Q wire going down into their shirt, just like the Secret Service does, so they can get communications from people that are directing the show, so to speak.
Well, the thing I envision and the thing that scares me is the fact that in one of these close chest bumping things that they do with the groups, especially, you know, at places like Stone Mountain and others, where these groups are actually showing up to prevent destruction of property. And of course, the police is on the other side. The police is on the side of the destructors and not the defenders. Charlottesville, Virginia, a couple of years ago was a prime example of that. That the police defend Antifa and BLM, and they're not defending the people who are trying to defend property. And I see at some point in time what a great thing, if you really want to hit the tripwire, if you want to turn this into something, we end up with a group of Antifa or BLM standing opposite a group of 3%ers or whatever they call themselves, local militia, whatever they're calling themselves. And suddenly some shots ring out and members of the militia or what have you start going down from snipers. And then, you know, of course, their friends who are standing there, they see it happen. And then so they start opening up on the other side. And suddenly we have a mass bloodbath beginning in one city. And I promise you, when it begins in one, it will begin. It will lead to in a lot more.
Yes, I agree with that. Yes, that tripwire could be pulled very, very easily, and they're setting the stage for just such events to happen. And you know, you were talking about all these Democrat-run cities earlier, and states for that matter. And I just recently learned that the governor of Oregon, Brown, her last name's Brown. I think it's Kate Brown's her first name. She's actually the youngest sister of Jerry Brown. And she was born into the Brown family. And here you have these families running entire states, generationally. And, you know, it's really incredible how small the club is at the top.
Well, that's true. And let's not forget, if I'm not mistaken, she's the one that called in the authorities to what basically ended up in the murder of LaVoy Finicum.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And, you know, I was just wanting to verify that information. And she is indeed the sister of Jerry Brown, you know, Pat Brown's daughter. And, you know, I looked on the Wikipedia page, didn't mention a word about her connection to the Brown family. Instead, it went on and on and on about how she's the first openly bisexual governor of Oregon. And, you know, what a hero she is and blah, 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 blah. Just going on and on about that. And that's sort of how they're using, you know, this weaponized homosexuality to influence society and to, you know, to distract people from issues that are a lot more important.
Well, that's true. And that they are basing, you know, we basically, I think it was Thomas Sowell, one of the most brilliant men in America, in my opinion, who wrote a fantastic book years ago. And I would highly recommend it to anyone. It was called Visions of the Anointed, and how what he goes into great detail and very, very astutely goes into great detail about the people who insist that socialism will work, and they insist that the only reason it hadn't worked in the past is because they weren't running it. And we are we're seeing the culmination of this right now, because every time someone wants to talk about socialism, you just bring up you know, Nazi Germany, which was fascism, which is national socialism. You bring up the Soviet Union and how they collapsed, and you look at Venezuela, you look at Cuba, you look at all of these places, and you bring up how socialism doesn't work, and they will tell you, well, it didn't work because they weren't running it. And so now we've got the beautiful, you know, you've got Chicago, you've got these inner cities, and you look at the death rate in Chicago, and then what's really scary is Chicago, with all of their murders, and they have someone is shot like every 2 or 3 hours, and someone's murdered every 12 hours or 13 hours in Chicago. And that is just continually going. And that's a city that has no, you know, they couldn't own guns. And so you have that going on, and you have, it's all led by socialists. The governments are run by socialists, and it is terrible. You've got murder, in places you don't even want to walk the streets of Chicago after dark, even in the good places. So it's terrible. And when you stop and think of the murder rate in Chicago, and Chicago's not even in the top 10 per capita. You've got Memphis, which is just terrible. And we don't hear anything. Pardon me. We don't hear anything about these mass murders. And, you know,
because a lot of, like, for example, in Chicago, it's mostly black on black shootings involved in gangs and turf wars. And of course, you know, that doesn't fit the narrative. So it's not discussed. And I think it's just a shame that we don't have any degree of honesty left in our government or the mainstream media. And really, you're talking about the mainstream media is essentially owned by, you know, I think it's just one company. They say it's six companies, but I can guarantee you it's all interlocking membership and ownership. And same with the corporations. I think the corporations are in far fewer hands than we've been told, because that's why we have sort of a unified corporate ideology. There isn't one company that's saying, well, no, we're conservative and we're not going along with any of this stuff. There isn't one. Instead, we have a unified front from all these corporations, which to me is an indication that it's in a fairly small number of hands.
Well, that's an astute observation, Dave. It's got to be that way. I mean, where are the major corporations coming out and saying, you know, I'm sorry, I don't go along with this. This is not something I'm going to do. They all jump into line. I noticed last night when we were interviewing this New Jersey attorney, and we were talking about natural born citizens, and I said, well, natural born citizen was also mentioned in Dred Scott v. Sanford in 1857, and the Supreme Court defined a natural born citizen. And he said, oh, but we don't mention that because that was a racist. That was a racist issue. I said, what difference does it make? You know, that's not what should be focused on. If we're going to focus on race, everything is racist. I mean, you know, let's just look at the typical term. Black Lives Matter is a racist term.
Absolutely. But that doesn't count because, you know, that's all part of the colonial exploitation, blah, 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 blah.
The Negro College Fund, that's not racist. And Hispanic Chambers of Commerce, that's not racist either. And, you know, and Miss Black Teenage America, that's not racist either. You know, this is the point, Dave. And I asked a good friend of mine who is a wonderful black man. I asked him one time and he was stumped at the answer. I said, answer one thing for me, please. And this was years ago. And he said, what's that? And because he had said, well, something has to be paid for racism. And I said, oh, well, then the people who didn't do it have to pay for it. And he said, well, he said, you do have a valid point. And I said, well, I have another point, too. And I said, when is the bill paid? Tell us when the bill is paid and you'll shut up.
And that day will never come, because I think the more that you give to such a thing like reparations, it's just going to cause more anger and they're going to want more and more. There'll be no end to it. And secondly, how do you even calculate who is black and what percentage black do you have to be? Are we going to give people DNA tests and trace their family lineage, or how is this going to work exactly? You know,
well, you make a great point again, Dave, is because let's look at the next generation of blacks that comes along. The next generation of black folks is going to say, well, hey, you know, you owe us, too, because we're black. You know, you paid them reparations. Hey, we're black, too, so we need reparations. And so you have set up a cycle that will never stop. Unless someone from the beginning says, OK, this is it. After this, there is no more racism, cannot be used as an excuse anymore. You know, and that was one of the things I also remember of. You know, Washington, D.C. was a terrible place to be in many respects. But then again, you didn't get to see wonderful things like a debate between the aforementioned author and, Kwasi Nfume and the Reverend Ralph Abernathy. You wouldn't get to see great debates like I saw there. And, Thomas Sowell made some absolutely fantastic comments. And this was in the 80s when he said, look, guys, as a black race, we've got to stop talking about racism. We've got to start dealing with problems within our own community. We've got to deal with black-on-black crime. We've got to deal with the out-of-wedlock birth rate. We've got to deal with broken families. We've got to deal with fathers who run off and leave the families because the mother will get more money for the families. So we've got to deal with those issues. Those are issues that we in the black community should be dealing with. Well, you know, then he gets called by Kwasi Nfume, who was head of the NAACP. He calls him an Uncle Tom.
Yeah, there you go.
And then, you know, and one of the most brilliant lines I've ever heard came from Thomas Sowell when I think it was Reverend Ralph Abernathy said, well, I just want you to tell me, Professor Sowell, tell me that you were never been affected by racism. And Thomas Sowell said, you know, I can't say that. I'll be honest with you. I really can't say that. But he said, one thing I do is every night I get down on my knees and I thank God for slavery. Because if it hadn't been for slavery, I could have been in Africa hunting lions with a sharp stick.
Yeah, that's being brutally honest. That's very interesting. And I think this is a part of a greater plan to atomize people and make sure that the entire population is at each other's throats so that we don't recognize, you know, who's really pulling the strings and who is controlling the narrative and the game that we all play in. So I think that's a big part of what they're up to. And of course, it was the Democrats, you know, the what LBJ's Great Society program, I believe, where they set this stage for this single mother thing and breaking up the family. And of course, you know, the mass importation of crack during the 1980s didn't help matters much either. So, these are contrived things from the government, not from average people walking the streets. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Against their tyranny. Number three is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne. And I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in defense condition one, as we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in. And I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the unequivocal truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
Just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, welcome back to the second hour of Dare to Think Out Loud. I'm Scorpio here, sitting in for LB today, who's a little under the weather. And I'm having a discussion here with Mr. Mike Gatti. And I'm also going to bring on Giuseppe from the District of Criminals to join in on the conversation here. Giuseppe has a new show here on Revolution Radio, Friday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A. And Mr. Mike Gatti has a show as well, Sunday nights, 6 p.m., Studio A. Giuseppe, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing really well. How do I sound? I'm becoming Mechanic Junior and talking while I'm driving.
You're sounding good so far. And okay. I believe this is the first time that you've talked with Mike, so this ought to be good.
Well, actually, that's not true. I mean, the great Rebel Madman, I've been on two different calls with him previous, and I have to say it's an honor because his vast knowledge of real history is just a treasure trove. I'm really glad he got his own show. We both took one of the great Jim Fetzer's slots, but exciting news that Jim Fetzer's back on Tuesdays on Studio B, so we now have the best of both worlds, I think.
Tuesday, 4 p.m., correct?
Yeah, Studio B, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tuesday, 4 p.m., Studio B, Dr. Jim Fetzer. Well, Mike, where do you want to pick things back up for the top of the hour here? Do you have anything on your mind right now?
Well, the first thing I want to do is welcome Giuseppe and to thank you for those very kind words, sir.
Oh, it's so true. You know, your first hour discussion was just so lucidly accurate and engaging. But one thing I'd like to bring up is I think that socialism has gotten a bad name because the real socialism, the German socialism of the late 19th century, was an excellent form of government that supported populism and supported entrepreneurialism and reined in the plutocrats. But like every government, it's only as good as the leaders and the people in power. And sadly, we get the most despicable parasites in every form of government these days.
Well, that's certainly true. And, I'm curious to get both of your takes on this. Personally, I think President Trump is in real trouble in terms of being reelected. I don't think it's going to happen. I suffered through Joe Biden's speech the other night, and frankly, he did a lot better than I thought he would, to be honest. And he didn't pull any major gaffes. Not that I approve of anything he said, but I think that they're going to push him through. And I honestly think we're going to be looking at the Democrats controlling all three branches of government, and that we're going to see this agenda move flawlessly ahead without any major problems. I don't know. Mike, what are you thinking on that?
Well, I first of all, I totally agree with Giuseppe about the people who are drawn to government service. I think in one of my articles years ago, I said that the aberrant behavior people are drawn to government like flies to a luau by a cesspool. And it just seems to be that it always attracts, you know, the people that, you know, if we look at it very simply, there are a group of people in America who are people who cherish liberty and cherish freedom, and they do not wish to implement what their wishes on anyone. They have no desire to go to the guy next door and say, look, I really believe in liberty and you don't, so you're going to do what I tell you to do, or I'll call the police and they'll take care of you. And so, but that the group of people who cherish freedom and who cherish liberty are a very small minority. The overall overwhelming group of people who really want to control other people. And if you don't believe that, look at the mask situation. Don't wear a mask and watch the people who are angry with you because you're not wearing a mask. So that is something that really troubles me, and that we all end up being run by people that want to control other people. And that's why I made the statement some time back. I think we would all be better off if we picked every member of the Congress randomly with phone book. I think we would have a much better selection, because then to bring about what we had in the Articles of Confederation, to bring about what our the people back then referred to as rotation, because Thomas Jefferson said people who serve government should be there for a short time and taken out and put back into their community, and therefore we could witness the genius of the entire community and not one particular sect of the community. So I hope I didn't jump off the rail too far.
No, those are actually some excellent points, Mike, and it's tying into what Giuseppe said. And, you know, this idea that freedom, people that believe in freedom and liberty, they extend it to the person next door. You want them to have their freedom and liberty too. And that's such an important distinction between, you know, that kind of thinking and people that want to go into government and control your lives, and people who've had 50 years in public service like Joe Biden. Well, Giuseppe, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Oh, I was just going to say that in my mind, everything Mike said is exactly right. And I would just add that the 2,000-pound elephant in the room is what Henry Ford described as the internationalist Jew, which I lovingly call the globalist parasite, because all those psychopaths and deviants in government are all beholden to their money masters, and they are implementing a plan that comes from above their pay grade, in my mind.
Yes. That's why everything is so unified in a way, because there is a central source of money that's called the central banks. And then you've got the central bank of the world, which is the Bank for International Settlements, that's enslaving and putting every country on the globe into debt.
And more than that, Scorpio, it's also, they have like this satanic agenda, especially going on in the United States, where they weaponize these minorities, be it the blacks, the lesbian, the LGBT, whatever that acronym is. Sometimes I remember, sometimes I don't. But they're all really mentally imbalanced individuals, you know, and it doesn't take into account the many, many success stories of working class and middle class blacks and Mexicans and Filipinos and Hmong and all the people who have come to this country and made it work for them. You know, the funny thing is, the reality is this country is a weird paradox of all lives matter and no lives matter, because you're just given the opportunity, unlike most other countries on earth, to make something of yourself, and you're not locked into a specific social class like much of Europe and much of the rest of the world. You're not oppressed by the totalitarian governments of much of the rest of the world. And so all the focus with these mentally ill libtards on, oh, the poor and the downtrodden, you know, none of these libtards since the 60s have put in any effective work programs. So these people may not be the sharpest tacks in the kit, but they could easily be all placed in living wage jobs and doing something for the good of the country. Where's that program? Where's any democratic program that actually gives the poor, the underclass, a true leg up in society?
Well stated.
What was that, Mike?
Giuseppe, I said that's very well stated. And Giuseppe, have you ever had the opportunity to investigate the Jewish influence in the Founding Fathers?
Yes, I have. I mean, that huge name Alexander Hamilton comes to mind.
Well, isn't it strange that he was allegedly a bastard child of a Scotsman, but his mother was in fact married to a Jew?
Yes, yes, it's really to me puts the exclamation point on it, as well as everything he advocated for was trying to create the globalist government that we now are unfortunately moving closer and closer to now. It's funny, it's been literally a 244 year struggle to keep those parasites at bay, but to me it's as though the international Jew is like a malignancy, and they now control the Supreme Court, they now control the banks, they now control the Senate, they now control the Congress, they now control the mass media, the entrainment tool. I mean, they are so arrogant. I mean, even as little as 40 years ago, they really skulked in the shadows, and now they're brazen about their control, and it's so disturbing. And why not, when you've destroyed the Democratic Party? When I was a little boy, working class, we had a small bleach factory in Milwaukee, where I grew up in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and then in the 80s, finally, we were put out of business by economies of scale. And so, you know, we all, well, we as in my ancestors, my father, grandfather, all voted Democrat because that was the one party that somehow championed working class people like us, small business owners like us. And you look at what the Democratic Party has turned into now. It's offensive, man. It's they serve these weaponized minorities. They're controlled by these weaponized minorities. They put up an impaired individual like Biden, who, of course, is going to be able to put a good speech videotaped in play and look good enough to get the nomination. And I'm of two minds, Scorpio. In a second, I'd like to address that. I can't see the silent majority voting for Joe Biden, and that's why I'm not sure Trump is done. I guess I already interjected that, but it's just like,
party? I'm not implying that it's going to be a fair election Biden will actually win the votes fairly. I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, the telling tale was when they trumped up these phony charges on Steve Bannon and put him in prison. They are trying to send a signal to any normal, rational, white person in this country that you try to get into this government now that we, the parasites, control it, you're going to have the hammer dropped on you. Because if you look into the actual Steve Bannon case, he 96% of that money raised went to the wall, and they took 4% and paid themselves. And if you look at the United Way charity, that 90% of that money goes to their CEO and their infrastructure, and only 10% goes to charities. So these are ridiculous charges on Bannon. I mean, I think Bannon's a dirtbag, but this guy's getting railroaded just like Roger Stone got railroaded.
Hey, Giuseppe.
Go ahead, Mike.
Also, stop and think about the scandal that was in the Red Cross and the Wounded Warrior program. And where did any of those people go to prison?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was funny. On the news, they said that they're accused of embezzling hundreds of thousands of dollars, which means that the entire amount that they're even alleging is under $1 million, which, you know, let's be honest, that isn't very much money when you come to these big foundations and so on and so forth. And, you know, Steve Bannon is worth, you know, at least $100 million. So I don't think that he was going to, you know, get involved in something for a couple hundred thousand dollars. It's ridiculous.
Well, it makes no sense. And Giuseppe, if I may, I like your comment about the working class people up north being members of the Democratic Party. And because I remember growing up in the rural South, Republicans were unheard of because of the radical Republicans after the Civil War and Reconstruction. But there were governmental offices in the South that no Republican held an office in the South for over 100 years in some particular offices. So the working man was usually a member of that party. But then let's stop and look at one other thing. Are you familiar with who founded the NAACP?
Yes. I think of the 18 founding members, 17 were internationalist Jews.
Yep. Well, and I thought it was ironic that it was years before they had a black person on their board of directors.
Exactly. You know, I'd like to ask Mike a question that I find is presently occurring as one of the most offensive things I could never imagine in my history, in my life. And in 2 days, I turned 61, so I'm getting a little long in the tooth. And that is the erasing of history and the noble effort of the South and the Confederacy. And all of a sudden, a Confederate flag is like a Nazi flag, which I personally think the Germans people were forced into what they did. And it wasn't just like they all went insane. People tend to forget what occurred 50 years prior. But Mike, how do you, as a man, as a proud man of the South, a wise historian, can you even believe this is going on?
Yes, I can, because I think I saw it coming some time back. I saw
Oh, Mike, you're dropping out, Mike.
Imagine that.
Well, Mike, we missed that whole statement. You dropped out. All we heard was, I saw this coming quite a while ago and didn't hear anything else. Could you repeat that?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I saw this as they had to have something to split up the people. They had to have a something to polarize the races. And it was absolutely imperative. Are either of you gentlemen familiar with H.K. Edgerton?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, are you familiar that H.K. Edgerton was the president of the NAACP in Asheville, North Carolina?
I did not know that, but I know of H.K. Edgerton.
Okay. H.K. Edgerton, and this was a story I heard. I cannot confirm or deny, but as head of the NAACP in Asheville, he was at a family reunion, and he was talking about how that the South was wrong, and you know it was just terrible what had happened to the blacks because of the people in the South, and you know the Civil War was just a terrible thing. And according to the story I heard, his aunt said, H.K., you might want to come in the house and let me show you a picture. You might want to do that before you get too carried away with this. And at least the story I was told was that he goes in and his aunt shows him a picture of his great-great uncle at a Confederate reunion sitting with the Confederate battle flag across his lap. And H.K. learned that his relative actually rode with Nathan Bedford Forrest as a full-fledged soldier.
Oh, man. See, that's what's so disgusting about the globalist fictional narrative of history. History is so rich and fascinating and complex, and we're sold these mind-control simplistic lies again and again. It's so offensive.
Have you, gentlemen, would you understand what was meant by the Sanitary Commission during the War of Northern Aggression?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Okay, the Sanitary Commission was basically the Hospital Commission. And this is in the National Archives. They cannot deny this. This was in the commander of the he was a general. I forgot his name right now. It started with an S. It'll come to me in a second. But anyway, he was commander of the hospital corps for the Union Army. And when he happened to be in Winchester, Virginia, and Winchester, Virginia was captured by Stonewall Jackson while he was there. And according to the report that he filed, and again, it's in the National Archives, the report that he filed, Stonewall Jackson came to him in the hospital and said, "Look, sir, you can stay here as long as you want. You can take care of your troops. I would ask you that you look after a couple of mine while you're here. You're free to leave at your will. Whenever you're ready to go, you and your staff are free to will. You are not free to go. You are not prisoners in no way." And in his report, he listed that among obviously he was trying to give the Union Army some help. He listed the approximate numbers that Stonewall Jackson had. And he said that it appeared that Stonewall Jackson had somewhere in the neighborhood of over 30,000 troops with him. And he said within those troops, there were at least 3,000 black soldiers. And they were carrying all of the same accoutrements of their fellow soldier.
There you go.
So,
wow, that's amazing.
These things are completely ignored. And I also know that in Lexington, Virginia, which was where Stonewall Jackson lived while he was a professor at BMI, there is a cemetery there called Green. It's the Green Cemetery in Lexington, Virginia. And it's basically an all-black cemetery. Well, there is a headstone there of one Levi Miller, L-E-V-I-M-I-L-L-E-R, and he was a resident of Rockbridge County, and on his tombstone is a Confederate battle flag.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, they like to reduce history to like these simple comic book versions with the supervillain and the superheroes, and that there's no areas in between, and that's how the Civil War is usually presented to the public. It's this evil bunch of racists that hated black people and wanted to enslave them forever. And the concept of rebellion against the federal government is never brought up.
Well, also, gentlemen, here's the thing, and I've told people this, is that in the Articles of Confederation, and this is fact, in the Articles of Confederation, slavery was not mentioned. The Constitution of 1787 actually quantified and embraced slavery, except they didn't mention the word slavery. They called it those in, you know, held in service. Slavery was embraced, and they agreed at the Constitutional Convention to continue slavery 20 more years as part of the Constitutional Convention. It was agreed, and it was agreed, and people can't blame that on the South, because the number there were seven northern states represented, and there were five southern states. So the northern states could have outvoted them when it came to slavery, so you can't blame it on the South. So slavery was accepted. It was written into the Constitution. And one man stood up, Luther Martin, who was the attorney general from the state of Maryland, stood up and just absolutely blasted them for including slavery. He said, "How can you even begin to embrace this despicable act? How can you believe?" He said, "Because the good Lord in heaven," and I'm paraphrasing, he says, "the good Lord in heaven looks with equal justice on the black man and the white man." He said that at the Constitutional Convention, but you won't hear anybody talk about that. But Luther Martin was against it. You know, George Mason said at the Constitutional Convention that slavery makes us all petty tyrants. You know, what a classic. So you had this at the Constitutional Convention, yet the Constitution embraced slavery. Okay, and then in 1857, the United States Supreme Court embraced slavery, but the South gets blamed for it. Now, here's a question I've asked to many groups. The Stars and Stripes, the American flag, flew over institutionalized slavery in this country for 80-plus years. The Confederate battle flag flew over slavery for a little less than 4 years. Which flag is racist?
There you go.
Yeah. Well, I don't think you're supposed to ask those kind of questions, Mike.
But I do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, maybe I could ask both of you guys this. We're coming close to the bottom of the hour, but, well, Mike, where do you see this going? Like, where are we heading to in the next few years in the United States from what you see going on?
Well, to me, it's mass chaos. Guys, this is not going to get better. I tell my children, my adult children, I tell them every day, enjoy this day, embrace this day, because this is probably the best day you're going to see for the rest of your life. And that it's going to get worse. It's going to get continually worse. They're going to come for mandated vaccinations. That's going to come. You're going to either have to have the mandated vaccination or you won't be allowed to vote or do a lot of others. And not that I want to vote anyway. But I see just an oppression coming. Prices are going to be sky high. You know, people are going to be short on food. They're going to be short on good water. This is not going to be pretty, gentlemen. Giuseppe, I'd like your viewpoint.
Giuseppe, you're muted. Okay. Well,
okay, I'm back. Here we go.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
We're
almost at the bottom of the hour.
Well, I guess I'll start my answer and then finish it after the break. But I think that Mike's exactly right. And I believe that this insane push towards masks and the enslavement and slave training that it indicates shows just how subservient, just how beaten down a vast majority of this citizenry is. And it's heartbreaking to me that so many people are so unable to think even at the basic level of critical thinking.
Yeah. Okay, we'll let you finish up your thought there after this break. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion, and as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, and we're back for the final half hour of Dare to Think Out Loud. I'm having a conversation with Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti. I just wanted to let Giuseppe finish up his thoughts, but Patrick made a really good point in the chat room. That kind of goes into what we've been talking about slavery and about the awful industrial conditions for white workers in the North, you know, with the ungodly hours and the child labor and all that. So that's a good point. Giuseppe, why don't you go ahead and finish up your thoughts before the break?
So to continue, as I was saying, and agreeing completely with Mike that you have to savor every decent day because we're facing dark days. And the funny thing is, in my mind, this whole scamdemic, plandemic, phase one was a test to see how obedient, how weak-willed, compliant the citizenry would be. And I think they succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. And I think now you're seeing the absolute authoritarian clampdown in Australia and New Zealand, and that's the test case for what's coming to America. And I think also the idea that you're seeing the setup right now. I don't know if you fellas saw that teeny tiny Tony Fauci, the master of talking out of both sides of his mouth, did the setup, which was, I don't think there'll be any mandatory vaccines. There's no need for that. And so now, in my mind, what's coming is the fact that they spend a half a trillion with a T dollars annually on bioweapons, and they have all manner of weapons that can wipe out a certain amount and then go benign. I'm absolutely certain that's what they released with the novel coronavirus, SARS-V2. And now what's coming is they're setting up the average normie to believe, oh, wow, the worst is over. And even Fauci, Uncle Tony, is saying we don't have to get a mandatory vaccine. And then, boom, they are going to release something this fall that's going to kill probably a half a million people or more. And all of a sudden, you're going to see lines in the streets in every major city 50 miles long with people in tents like the Beatles came back from the dead and did a reunion concert that are waiting for that vaccine. So I think that that is the realistic future. My only hope, and it's a long shot in football, it's a Hail Mary, is that when they release this Moderna vaccine, that's the one that Bill Gates is back in and Trump just paid a billion with a B, $3. $1.3 billion to Moderna last week. I'm hoping that when they start injecting people. Sadly, it will kill and maim a shocking amount of people. So this whole plan is derailed. To me, that's the only way that will wake up the average normie.
Well, it wasn't Dr. Fauci, one of the first heads of Moderna, and is heavily invested in the company as well, I believe.
That's exactly right. In fact, the insanely corrupt facade of the CDC, people think it's a government agency like the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor reserve. It's controlled by the internationalist Jew. And the CDC is a bizarre hybrid with some government functionality, but majority of private enterprise in the sense of enterprising parasites get to patent vaccines that are developed by the taxpayer dollar. And Fauci is the main windfall recipient. That little weasel is worth hundreds of millions of dollars because of that.
Yeah, I think his net worth is somewhere around $500 million. That's not bad work if you can find it. Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, it's this is, and Giuseppe, at least the socialism that I study is and have looked at over the years is where the certain group of people, the elite, end up fantastically wealthy while the other people wallow in poverty. And I think Venezuela is a good example of that. And so, but all of that requires a strong central government. But, you know, when I look at these people, and this is a point I've made on multiple occasions, is the uber rich, the ultra rich, do not care what type of government they live under. They don't care whether it's democracy. They don't care. It makes no difference because of their wealth and their position, they're going to control the situation, regardless of the government. So the government they pine for, the government they want, is the government that allows them to control the other 99% of the population and to use them for their own purposes, regardless of whether that be to create money or to create products. That is the point to where the people are used by an elite aristocracy, and they remain and stay, just crazy wealthy. I'm not against anyone making money. I love that. I think people should go out there if you come up with a good idea. But when you must affiliate yourself with government to become wealthy, that's when we have some serious problems.
That's true. And then the line becomes blurred, you know, between the fascism and communism, in a sense, because really they end up being the same thing in a way, because if you're not closely associated with government under either system, you're not getting far in life.
And I would like to interject that, of course, it's all semantics. But to me, Mike, what you described is a totalitarian oligarchy, and it's not socialism. Socialism is like communism. I mean, I despise communism, but we've never actually seen a real communist government in existence as defined by Marxism. What we see is brutal authoritarianism, and it's always the same. Even in this country, which is supposedly free elections, it's always the same. There's some type of weird switch in the human's brain that they want to be ruled. They want to be enslaved. Otherwise, we'd have more fair governments. I mean, look at the United States. The great experiment once was of the people, by the people, for the people. And now it's of the parasites, by the parasites, for the parasites.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Giuseppe. And, you know, at the beginning of the country, one reason why there was so much freedom is that the federal government didn't have the reach and the power to enact all the laws that they wanted. And things were decentralized at that time, and that's why there was so much freedom and liberty. But I wanted to ask both of you guys, because, we're all kind of in agreement that things are going to get worse before they get better. And I wanted to see what Mike thought, and you as well, Giuseppe, about the concept that possibly there might be secessionist movements coming for, like, regions or states or just land masses. I don't know, Mike, do you think that's a possibility, or is that just a pipe dream?
Well, I think there will be a move for that, because, you know, the old part about secession If you can't say no to government, you're a slave. It's real simple. That's a real simple equation. And if I may jump the reins for just 1 second and then get back to that, I meant to bring this up to Giuseppe. I asked him a very quick question. Have you been to Chicago, sir?
Oh, many times. I mean, yes, probably over 100 times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you know where Vley Place is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Have you ever noticed the monument at Vley Place? One of the monuments.
Yes, I've seen the monuments, but I do no longer have them in my mind, if you can enlighten me.
Okay, here is the point. There is a statue there, a monument there, with George Washington in the middle, with Robert Morris on his right. And Robert Morris was the financier of the war, the Revolutionary War, where he converted funds and made himself about 17 cool million back in 1781 to 85. There is a statue of George Washington, Robert Morris, and a person by the name of Haim Salomon, H-A-Y-M-S-A-L-M-O-N.
Yes.
Oh, I'm familiar with Haim.
Okay, and that
yeah,
is,
me too.
And see, this is the thing that most people don't know because we're so ignorant of our own history. If you were Jewish in 1787, you could not hold public office.
Right.
So very quickly, they got behind a movement to put Article 6, Clause 3 into the Constitution because 12 of the 13 states at that time, with Rhode Island being the only exclusion, 12 of the 13 states had a religious oath in their states to the Christian faith. 12 of the 13.
That's
so
right.
At the Constitutional Convention, they had to get rid of that, and that was backed by the Jewish element. They want, because I can show you letters that came from the National Archives, which they personally sent to various members, delegates to the Constitutional Convention, to get rid of those oaths to Christianity. And yeah, so Article 6, Clause 3 did that for them, but it not only eliminated the oaths to Christianity in the federal government, it eliminated the oaths to Christianity in the state governments.
There you go, man. It's been an insidious cancer for far longer than most people realize.
Well, and, you know, that is, again, the title for my show, Addicted to Our Own Destruction. Because people embrace what has enslaved them. But anyway, that was my point. I'm glad that you're familiar with Haim Salomon, because he was very much involved in the finances, and he was running a game between the Bank of London, or the Bank of England, and Robert Morris. And there was some shenanigans that went on there. And that is why the essays of Sentinel, who was Samuel Bryan, that is why you can see the 24 essays of Samuel Bryan or Sentinel that, you know, are about 160 pages long. And you can go on Amazon if you like and look on Amazon, and you will quickly find out that that book with those 24 essays will only cost you $930. So this is how they hide stuff. I've called this stealth censorship. They can say, oh, well, those are available. Yes, but how many people in America are going to pay $930 for a little small paperback book?
So true. And how many people even are willing to look at the real history, like Scorpio so lucidly described? The average normie likes to have it be the comic book plot with a true hero, a true villain, and the victims that are saved. I mean, that's the narrative that is woven again and again and again. It's so ridiculous.
Amen. And that is a great analogy. That was super, Dave. To bring it up that way, because the one thing you can't do is Americans have been indoctrinated for 100 years in the public fool system. And they have been indoctrinated that you don't think about anything, you feel everything. Everything is an emotion. And that is why they're able to get over with this pandemic. They're able to be with the fear, which is an emotion. Logic doesn't play into the game. This is a classic psyop where you play on emotions because you have trained a generation for 100 years to deal with every situation emotionally. Look at the headline news. Go to the headline news and skim down, and every issue is emotional. And it's all
that's
it's
a
all
great planned. Point. Yeah, that's a great point, because once you're into emotion, you're into sort of the reptilian brain, and you're not using the higher functions of your mind. And, of course, when people don't get the proper education, they don't know how to think. It's not knowing what to believe or what to feel. It's to learn how to think and use logic and reason.
Well, Mike, I'm sure you're aware of the former requirement in many states, such as Kansas, in about 1906, that you had to take a test to prove that you had learned enough in high school to deserve your diploma. And that test is so rigorous that you could probably give it to Harvard PhD students today and they would fail it. So that's the dumbing down of this country.
Oh, I totally agree. And see, one of the things that we have noticed as our grandchildren are taking online classes is that they are teaching, what they're teaching is emotional claptrap. There are no facts. Nothing is actually given or backed up anymore. And, you know, recently in our grandson's class, the teacher sent them a geography lesson with the Continental Divide running down through the state of Utah. And we challenged that. And the answer... The answer was, well, that's what I was taught. Well, you know, and we may think, well, that's something simple. But if that's one lie they're being taught, how many other lies are they being taught? And so we have a group of people, and then we went through the educational system. We did the wonderful thing called, self-esteem. And basically what self-esteem worked out to is you taught all students in school that no one can tell them they're wrong, because it hurt their feelings. So look today at the people when you try to give them documented information and they become angry at you. And if you try to give documented information to a right-wing conservative, they'll call you a liberal.
And well, we're all getting a trophy for participation today, Mike. I'm honored to get one.
Thanks, Giuseppe. I needed that. Thank you.
Well, so Mike, we're almost out of time. What are your thoughts on the idea of secessionist movements as being part of the future, or is that just something that isn't going to be allowed to happen? Or what are your thoughts on that subject?
Well, number one is three states in their ratification agreements in 1788 put secession into their ratification agreements. Now, either when the government accepted their ratification with that proviso, they accept either their states that can secede or their states that or they cannot secede. Then if you take Article 4, Section 2, it says any privileges that one state has, they all have. So effectively written into the Constitution, written into the ratification of the Constitution was the right to secede. Of course, Abraham Lincoln said, no, don't try that. I'll kill 800,000 people to prevent it. So it's very simple. The Declaration of Independence is an act of secession. There was a group of people who wanted to get away from a tyrannical government. If you tell people they can't leave a tyrannical government, what you tell the tyrant is do whatever the hell you want to. Nobody can stop you.
To me, the right, only and, way secession.
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, I was going to say, to me, the only way secession will ever realistically happen is if there's a split in the military and there's a faction of the military that backs the secession and has the muscle to protect the secessionists. Until then, it will never happen.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen.
That's actually a very good point.
It is. It's an excellent point, and I don't believe it's going to happen because I don't believe there are enough people who are politically aware or historically aware in any state anymore to actually perform a secession movement. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, unfortunately. But here's the thing. What I see is that we're reaching a breaking point fairly soon. And you're going to have a fairly large group of people that are not going to want to live under the new system that they're trying to unveil. You're going to have another group that embrace it and can't wait to get in it. And there's a great divide that's happening. So I don't know what happens to those people that don't want to participate in this new totalitarian technocratic system.
Well, you think?
I don't see that people are going to have any real choice. And the reason being, I think, is number one is they're going to control all the money. And that is going to come about by digital processes. And there's some places in Europe right now that's already in effect, and where with your own money, your purchase has to be approved by your bank. And if all you have is digital money, then you're stuck. And I see so many things coming.
Yeah.
And Dave, at some point in time, and Giuseppe, I'd love for you to join us on my show. I think we ought to go into a full show on what's coming.
Right.
Let's do that. That'd be great.
I'd like to interject.
And I just want to touch upon one thing you said, Mike, that digital currency is going to be one of the keys, because once you have that, all the rules and all the checks and balances are completely out the window, and you can just do pretty much whatever you want.
Exactly. And I think that is one of the keys. I think mandatory vaccine is going to be one of the others. And I don't want to jump into our whole projected show that we're going to come up with. But I look forward to that. I think we can show to the people a pretty good line of what's on the horizon.
And I would like to interject that realistically what will occur is a system where there's a massive local to regional gray market where you'll maintain the illusion of participation in the federal totalitarianism. But in reality, you're growing your own food, you're bartering, you're not getting the vaccine, but you create your own little microculture. And you're the people who do this are savvy enough to not really cross the line and rub it in the nose of the totalitarians. I think you're going to see a lot of that, especially in more rural areas, about 50 miles or more outside the giant cities.
I could agree with that.
Yeah, because the dividing line is already being drawn across rural versus urban people. Big time in this country, and that's only going to increase. And I think the scenario you just sort of outlined is something that's plausible. Mike, what do you think about such a system?
Oh, I think that there are going to be small enclaves, if I may use that word. There are going to be small enclaves of people, like-minded people, who are going together and try to stay as much under the official radar as they possibly can. And I think because history tells us this will happen, and that I think that's true. It will happen. You will have small enclaves of people. They will have their own small communities. And it's not going to be unlike what was in America for 150 years before we ended up with a ruling government, because the people in the far western stretches of this country had their own small little villages where they were totally self-sufficient. I see that happening again.
That's very interesting, Mike. I think it's plausible, too, because, I've been watching some of these videos on YouTube, people that are showing you how to do ancient technologies, like, how to make mud bricks or how to build a house out of mud bricks with a natural tile roof using primitive tools. And some of these videos are getting 30 million hits. So that tells me there's a lot of people that are interested in that kind of possibility as a future.
Well, that's a good average then. If you're getting 30 million hits, that's 10% of the population. And I have said that the very max, I believe, of the number of people who will resist this would be 10% of the people.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're coming to the close of the show. Giuseppe, tell us what you have lined up for tonight on your show, tonight at 6.
Tonight at 6 on The Perfect Triangle is one of my personal heroes, a muckraker, champion of the USS Liberty Truth. Dave Gaheri is a journalist, an author. He's just a fascinating guy, and he'll be our guest tonight.
Great. And Mike, what do you have lined up for Sunday?
Well, Sunday, what I wanted to do is something well over 10 years ago. I started teaching classes in several Western states, and then I've carried those classes on to Arkansas, and now I'm in Georgia. Haven't got them started here yet, but I've tried to teach classes and I taught them in Utah, Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, taught one in Oklahoma. I've taught them in Arkansas. What I'm trying to do, I wanted to really wake people up to the truth of American history. And, of course, I've never gone mainstream. I've never charged anyone for any of these courses. So I've tried to teach the American public. What I want to do on Sunday night, Dave, and thank goodness you're my producer, I want to bring some of these people on to talk about how they took these classes and how they adjusted their lifestyle to those classes and to see, basically, it's kind of an ego trip for me because I really want to see if I've had any effect with the people I've been instructing.
Wow, that's going to be great. And, you know, your history does sort of revolutionize, for lack of a better word, your people's perception of American history. And on the closing moment, I would just like to say that I liked where our conversation ended because it's one thing to, you know, scream and moan about the Illuminati and all their plans, but it's time to start coming up with solutions and things we're going to do about it for the future because the government is not going to fix these problems for us. We have to do it ourselves. And it's time to start visualizing some solutions for people's lives. Okay, there's the music. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Listening to Revolution.